Let's turn now to section B on Faraday's law and controlled potential electrolysis. We saw in section A how current potential curves are obtained in simple electrochemical cells, and now we want to go on to examine how these curves may be used in conjunction with Faraday's law to perform electroanalytical determinations of reactants and solutions and to elucidate the details of more complex electrode reactions. B1 expresses Faraday's law in the form of a word equation. It states simply that the amount of electrical charge that passes through an electrode is directly proportional to the amount of chemical change that results, and the proportionality constant, called the Faraday, is 96,484 coulombs per mole of one electron reactant. Thus, to change the oxidation state of one mole of a reactant by one unit will require a current of 1 ampere flowing for 96,484 seconds. This emphasizes that the Faraday is a very large unit, and in fact that is the source of one of the major advantages of electrochemical methods of analysis, namely a high sensitivity. For example, in a solution containing only 1 micromole of a one-electron reactant, about 1/10 of a coulomb would be required for its complete electrolytic consumption, and 1/10 of a coulomb is an amount of charge that can readily be measured with high accuracy. In order to apply Faraday's law for analytical purposes, to take advantage of this high sensitivity, it is necessary that only a single electrode reaction be proceeding at the electrode during the period that the total charge passing through the electrode is being measured. That is, the electrical efficiency for an electrode process of interest must be 100% in order for the direct application of Faraday's law. Equation B2 gives the formula for the efficiency of Faradaic processes. The electrical efficiency is often called the Faradaic efficiency, and it is proportional to the amount of chemical product resulting from a particular electrode reaction divided by the total electrical charge passed at the electrode. When the Faradaic efficiency is 100%, the number of moles of product obtained, multiplied by N and the Faraday, will be exactly equal to the total charge passed. And to choose conditions for an electrolysis in order to obtain 100% Faradaic efficiency, one refers to the current potential curves characteristic of the particular solution of interest. Figure B3 shows a typical current potential curve, which might be measured in a solution of a reactant which it was desired to reduce by electrolysis at controlled potential. The solid curve in Figure B3 is divided into 3 regions by the vertical lines labeled A, B, and C. At potentials to the left of A, nothing happens because the potential of the electrode is outside the region of electroactivity of the reactant. To the right of A, the current potential curve begins to rise and reduction of the reactant commences. By the time we reach the line labeled B, the current has reached its limiting value, determined by the maximum rate at which reactant can be supplied to the electrode surface, and we have a limiting current, the origin of which we discussed in section A. Finally, to the right of line C, when the potential becomes even more negative, the current rises again as the solvent itself, or some component of the background electrolyte, begins to be reduced. The lower dashed curve in Figure B3 shows the current potential curve for the solution containing only the background supporting electrolyte, but none of the reactant. As you might expect, this curve doesn't begin to rise until the most negative potentials are reached to the right of line C, where the solvent or supporting electrolyte itself begin to be electrolyzed. The point to note is that between lines A and C, the Faradaic efficiency, as defined in equation B2, would be 100%, while to the right of line C, the efficiency would drop below 100% because the reduction of the solvent, or background electrolyte, would contribute to the total charge passed without a corresponding increase in the amount of reactant being reduced. So, in conducting controlled potential electrolyses, in which Faraday's law is to be invoked, One always tries to select potentials at regions in the current potential curve where only the single electrode reaction of interest proceeds. When such regions can be found, it is straightforward to apply Faraday's law to perform controlled potential coulometric analyses. Equation B4 is another expression for Faraday's law, this time in terms of symbols. Capital Q is the total charge passed through the electrode during the controlled potential electrolysis. Capital N, the number of moles of reactant present in the solution to be electrolyzed. Small n, the number of moles of electrons, i.e. the number of Faradays consumed per mole of reactant consumed in the electrolysis, and capital F, the Faraday itself. The essence of Faraday's law is that the total electrical charge, which is equal to the integral of the current over the time of the electrolysis, is given by the product of capital N times little n times the Faraday. There are various ways in which relationship B4 can be exploited electrochemically. For example, if we have a solution of unknown composition containing a reactant whose electrode reaction has been previously studied and understood, then we can use Faraday's law to analyze the solution. We simply adjust the potential of the electrode to a region where the reaction of interest proceeds with 100% Faradaic efficiency. We then electrolyze the solution while it is vigorously stirred and wait until the current decays to a small value, zero in the ideal case, at which point all of the reactant in the solution will have undergone electrolysis. At that point, the total quantity of charge which has been passed is noted, and equation B4 is applied to determine capital N, the total number of moles of reactant that were originally present. Now, in actual practice, there is always a small residual current that flows even in the absence of any reactant, because it is difficult to exclude oxygen completely, or because some component present in the high concentrations of supporting electrolytes normally employed may undergo slow electrolysis, which gives rise to background currents. So, the conventional procedure is to carry out the electrolysis of a reactant until the current decays to the same small value that was obtained in a blank electrolysis in a solution free of the reactant. The total charge obtained by integration of the decaying current over the period of the electrolysis is then corrected for the amount of the charge that passed as a result of this residual current, which is assumed to be flowing at a constant level throughout the electrolysis. Now, to apply this kind of correction, the question of time comes in. How long does it take for a controlled potential electrolysis to be completed? To answer that question, we need to consider the current time behavior during a controlled potential electrolysis of a stirred solution of a reactant. Equation B5 comes from section A, where we derived it on the basis of the diffusion layer approximation. It gives the current at potentials corresponding to the limiting current plateau of the current potential curve in a stirred solution of the reactant. The current is equal to the number of Faradays per mole involved in the electrode reaction times the Faraday times the electrode area times the diffusion coefficient of the reactant times its concentration in the bulk of the solution divided by delta, the thickness of the diffusion layer. During the controlled potential electrolysis, the bulk concentration of the reactant changes, and the rate of that change is given by equation B6, where dCbdt is the time derivative of the bulk concentration of reactant. If we multiply it by the total volume of the solution to convert the concentration to moles, and by little n, the number of Faradays consumed per mole of reactant, we get the rate of chemical change in the units of Faradays per second. Now, we know from Faraday's law that equation B5 must be equal to equation B6. That is, electrical change can be equated via the Faraday to chemical change. And that identification is made in equation B7, where the current is equated to the rate of chemical change. Well, equation B7 is a differential equation which describes a first-order decay process. The rate of change of the concentration is proportional to the concentration. Such first-order differential equations are readily integrated, and doing so leads to equations B8 and B9. B8 shows that the concentration of the reactant in the bulk of the solution decays exponentially during the course of a controlled potential electrolysis. The concentration at any time is given by its initial value, multiplied by an exponential term involving the time, and a decay constant, K, which measures the rate at which the exponential decay proceeds. We can also express this decay in terms of the current, which is proportional to the bulk concentration, as we saw in equation B5. And you'll note from equation B9 that the current also decays exponentially from its initial value, I sub zero. The parameters that determine the exponential decay constant, K, are given in equation B10. The bigger the value of K, the more rapid the decay of the current, and vice versa. And from the parameters that make up this constant, we see how we can influence the rate at which an electrolysis would proceed. If the area of the electrode is increased, the decay constant becomes larger, and the rate of the decay therefore increases. Or, if the diffusion coefficient of the reactant is larger, the decay is more rapid. The parameters appearing in the denominator of the term on the right-hand side of equation B10 are the volume of the solution and the thickness of the diffusion layer. These need to be minimized in order to increase the electrolysis rate. Everything else being equal, the smaller the volume of the solution, the more rapidly can it be electrolyzed, and the smaller the thickness of the diffusion layer, that is, the more effectively we stir the solution, the more rapid will be the decay of the current. The logarithmic form of equation B8 is plotted in figure B11. The logarithm of the current, or of the concentration, plotted against time, gives a straight line with a slope determined by the exponential decay constant we have just discussed. If we evaluate that constant with some typical values for the parameters shown beneath figure B11, we obtain a value for the decay constant of about 2.525 times 10 to the minus 3 reciprocal seconds, or correspondingly of 0.15 to 0.3 reciprocal minutes. Table B12 gives some typical current time data that correspond to a decay constant of 0.225 reciprocal minutes and a 10 millimolar solution of a reactant whose electrolysis requires 2 Faradays of charge per mole. Note how rapidly the electrolysis proceeds at the start. 20% of the reactant reacts in the first minute of electrolysis. After 20 minutes, only 1% of the reactant remains. And if the electrolysis is continued for 10 more minutes, essentially all of the reactant is converted into product. The typical duration of a controlled potential electrolysis is 20 to 40 minutes. Quite a variety of cells have been devised for carrying out controlled potential electrolyses, and the references listed at the end of this section contain detailed descriptions of a number of them. Figure B13 shows an example of a typical cell that is useful in simple controlled potential electrolyses. This is a two-compartment cell in which the auxiliary electrode is isolated by a sintered glass frit from the main compartment of the cell in which the reaction of interest undergoes electrolysis. The purpose of this isolation of the auxiliary electrode is to avoid any of the electrolysis products formed at this electrode from contacting and possibly reacting chemically with the desired electrolysis products that are formed in the main compartment of the cell. In this particular cell, a mercury pool is shown as the working electrode, which is typical when electroreductions are being carried out. The reference electrode in the main compartment is the electrode against which the potential of the working electrode is adjusted during the controlled potential electrolysis. Let's consider now some typical analytical applications of controlled potential coulometry, which will be based on equation B14, in which capital N is the number of moles of the reactant present, which we are trying to determine. Capital Q is the measured charge required for an exhaustive controlled potential electrolysis of the reactant, And little n is the known number of Faradays per mole consumed in the electrode reaction, while F is the Faraday. The first example involves the determination of tin in oxidation state 4 by its controlled potential electrolysis in an acidic bromide solution. Figure B15 shows the current potential curves measured at a mercury pool electrode. Curve 1 is the residual current curve, the curve obtained in the electrolyte free of any tin 4. It has the general shape of the current potential curves for residual currents we have discussed earlier. The sharp increase in the negative anodic current at about minus 200 millivolts results from the oxidation of the mercury electrode in the presence of bromide. And in between that potential of minus 200 millivolts out to about minus 1,000 millivolts, the residual current is flat, corresponding to no other electrode reactions until the evolution of hydrogen commences and the current rises again at the most negative end of the potential scale. Curve 2 is the current potential curve that results if some tin 4 is added to the solution. And you see we obtain a curve with two limiting current regions. The first occurs between potentials of about minus 250 and minus 450 millivolts and corresponds to the reduction of the tin 4 to tin 2, as is written in equation B16. And then, at potentials between about minus 500 and minus 900 millivolts, tin 4 is reduced by 4 electrons to form tin metal, which dissolves in the mercury pool electrode to form an amalgam. So the overall electrode reaction in this potential range is reaction B17. When an investigation was made of the possibility of determining tin 4 by reducing it at controlled potential at a mercury electrode in the reference cited above figure B15, moderately good analytical results were obtained when the potential of the electrode was held in the region of the first limiting current, where reaction B16 proceeds, but the accuracy was no better than a few percent, and there were indications that the tin 2, which was formed in the solution during the electrolysis, underwent reactions with trace impurities in the solution, such as oxygen, to regenerate tin 4. So the overall charge consumed systematically exceeded the amount that corresponded to the tin 4 initially present in the solution. On the other hand, when the electrolysis was carried out on the second plateau of the current potential curve in B15, namely at minus 700 millivolts, the tin 4 was reduced to tin metal, which dissolves in the mercury electrode and was effectively removed from the solution and, therefore, was prevented from reacting with any component of the solution. Under these conditions, very good analytical results were obtained, as shown in table B18. Three replicate analyses of samples containing 46 milligrams of tin were carried out, and the data obtained are given in the table. Just under the table, a sample calculation is presented to show how the values in the third column of the table were obtained. Each value of Q, the coulombs consumed at minus 700 millivolts, is divided by 4 times the Faraday, because 4 moles of electrons are required to reduce each mole of tin 4 to tin amalgam. The result is the number of moles of tin found, and this is converted to milligrams of tin by multiplying by the atomic weight of tin. Note the high accuracy of these analyses, in which Faraday's law is used to relate the measured coulombs of charge consumed to the amount of tin in the samples. This is a good example of the ways in which Faraday's law can be applied to electroanalysis by means of electrolysis at controlled potential. The example of the determination of tin by controlled potential electrolysis represented a particularly simple application. Slightly more complex situations are involved in the following examples. B19 deals with the determination of the trichloroacetate anion by controlled potential electrolysis in the presence of dichloro, monochloro, and unchlorinated acetate anions, which are all common impurities in samples of trichloroacetate. These other anions interfere in many analytical methods for trichloroacetate, but the controlled potential electrolysis method avoids the interferences. The reduction of trichloroacetate anion at a mercury pool electrode proceeds as shown in equation B19, commencing at potentials near minus 700 millivolts. The product of the electrode reaction, dichloroacetate, is also reducible, but not until potentials more negative than minus 1600 millivolts. So there is a large range of potentials between the point at which trichloroacetate is reduced and dichloroacetate begins to be reduced, where the Faradaic efficiency for the reduction of trichloroacetate, according to reaction B19, is 100%. Neither monochloro or unchlorinated acetate anions are reduced before the evolution of hydrogen at very negative potentials. In the publication cited in this example, analytical accuracy of about 0.2% was obtained for the determination of trichloroacetate in the presence of 5- to 10-fold excesses of dichloroacetate. This is a good example of how the ability to choose the potential at which an electrolysis is carried out allows very good discrimination between interfering electrode reactions and the one of interest. In the next example, B20, careful control of the electrode potential is used twice to accomplish the determination of chromium by means of controlled potential electrolysis. In the first step of the procedure, the chromium in the sample, which may be present as both chromium-6 and chromium-3, is converted quantitatively to chromium-2. This can be carried out by a controlled potential electrolysis of the solution at a potential of minus 1100 millivolts versus a saturated calomel reference electrode in a hydrochloric acid solution at a mercury pool electrode. However, the Faradaic efficiency with which these two oxidation states of chromium can be converted to chromium-2 is well below 100% under these conditions, because significant reduction of the protons present accompanies the production of chromium-2 at minus 1100 millivolts. Faraday's law is, of course, not violated in such circumstances, but it cannot be used to determine the amount of chromium present from the charge consumed in the electrolysis. However, all of the chromium in the sample can still be converted to chromium-2 by electrolyzing the solution for 15 to 30 minutes at minus 1100 millivolts. Thereafter, it becomes possible to carry out a controlled potential oxidation of the chromium-2 back to chromium-3, as indicated in B21. A very different potential can be used during this stage of the electrolysis. Minus 400 millivolts is quite suitable. And at this potential, the anodic electrode reaction proceeds with 100% Faradaic efficiency. The amount of charge consumed during the second electrolysis is a direct measure of the amount of chromium present in the original sample. And in the cited publication, accuracies of 0.1% were achieved for the analysis of quantities of chromium as small as 0.1 milligram. Even with a few micrograms, accuracies of plus or minus 1% were achievable in a variety of samples. So, in this case, you see the electrolysis served two functions. First, the desired oxidation state of the element was prepared electrochemically, and then it was determined by means of a control potential coulometric analysis with excellent results. Well, these examples, I hope, have pointed out some of the analytical advantages of controlled potential coulometry. Some of these are listed under B21. The method offers considerable selectivity because the potential at which the electrolysis is performed can be selected by the analyst. Proper selection of potentials often provides high discrimination in favor of the particular electrode reaction of interest. A second significant advantage is that controlled potential electrolysis, in conjunction with Faraday's law, is an absolute analytical method. The value of the Faraday is known to very high accuracy, so that no calibrations or standard solutions are required to perform analyses. Measurement of the quantity of electricity consumed is all that is required. The quantity of reactant present can then be calculated directly from equation B14. Finally, the controlled potential electroanalytical method has high inherent precision and accuracy. In this regard, it is superior to many of the other electroanalytical methods we shall be discussing, which are based on measurements of diffusion-limited currents whose magnitude depend on mass transfer rates. Precision better than 1 to 2% is very difficult to achieve with these methods, but controlled potential coulometric analysis is capable in principle of much greater accuracy and precision. As with any analytical method, there are some disadvantages of controlled potential electrolysis. The most common difficulty is that if a potential cannot be found where the Faradaic efficiency of the electrode reaction is 100%, then errors are inevitable. Secondly, rather long times are required to complete controlled potential electrolyses. 99.9% of the reactant present must reach the electrode surface and react to achieve an accuracy of 0.1%, and as we have seen, such electrolyses will consume a fair fraction of an hour to complete. Much briefer electrolysis times are possible, however, in cases where lower accuracy is acceptable. For example, Table B12 shows that only 2/3 as long a time is needed to cause 99% of a reactant to undergo reaction as is required to achieve 99.9% reaction. Similarly, if an accuracy of only about plus or minus 10% could be tolerated, electrolysis for times as short as 10 minutes would suffice in many instances. A second major use of electrolysis at controlled potential is in the determination of the stoichiometry of electrode reactions. For example, if we have a solution containing a known quantity of a reactant, which undergoes an electrode reaction whose details may not yet have been worked out, we can use Faraday's law in conjunction with a controlled potential electrolysis to learn something about the stoichiometry of the unknown reaction. This is emphasized in B22 by rewriting Faraday's law in a form where the value of capital N, the number of molecules of reactant present, is regarded as known, and a measurement of the charge required for its complete electrolysis allows the value of little n, that is, the number of Faradays per mole involved in the electrode reaction, to be calculated. An example of this kind of application is given in B23 through B25. It involves the reduction of acetophenone at mercury electrodes. The reduction of acetophenone in the presence of acid commences with a one-electron step, shown in B23, to produce a radical. The reaction can then proceed by either of two paths. Two of the radicals produced in reaction B23 may react with each other to form the pinacol, as shown in reaction B24, or the radical formed in B23 may be further reduced at the electrode with the consumption of another electron to form the carbonyl, as indicated in reaction B25. If the reaction proceeds via reaction B23 followed by B24, only one Faraday will be consumed per mole of acetophenone that is reduced, and little n in equation B22 will be evaluated as 1. On the other hand, if the reaction proceeded entirely by B23 followed by B25, then two Faradays would be consumed per mole of acetophenone, and the value of small n would be 2. In fact, under a variety of conditions, the value of little n obtained from such controlled potential electrolyses is quite close to 1, indicating that the primary reaction product is the pinacol shown in reaction B24. And this coulometric result is confirmed by workup of the electrolysis solution from which high yields of the pinacol can be obtained. A second example of a similar kind of diagnostic coulometry commences with reaction B26, where we consider the reduction of the benzyl dimethyl aniline cation at mercury electrodes in two different solvents. Here again, the cation is reduced in a first step by one electron to form the product shown in reaction B26. Dimethyl aniline is one of the products, and benzyl radical is the other. And, as is frequently the case in electrode reactions where a radical is produced, a variety of pathways open up for further reactions. One possibility open to the benzyl radical formed in B26 is for it to react with water, if the reaction is carried out in an aqueous solvent, to produce toluene and hydroxyl radicals, as in reaction B27. the resulting hydroxyl radicals would be instantly reduced at all potentials accessible to the mercury electrode to form hydroxide ions, according to equation B28. And if the course of the reaction followed B26, B27, and B28, two electrons would be consumed for each molecule of the benzyl dimethyl aniline cation initially present. Alternatively, the benzyl radicals could follow the pathway shown in B29, dimerizing to form a dibenzyl. This pathway involves the consumption of only one electron per molecule of the initial cation, and this would be reflected in the smaller number of coulombs consumed during the control potential electrolysis. Some results of such controlled potential coulometric electrolyses are summarized in table B30. When the electrolysis is carried out in water at room temperature, the total charge consumed corresponds to 2 electrons per molecule. The reaction products that are consistent with this value are those shown in B26 and B27, namely dimethyl aniline and toluene. And in fact, these products are isolated in high yield from the electrolysis solutions. In contrast, if the electrolysis is carried out at low temperature in acetonitrile, which has been purified to remove most of the water, which is a common impurity in the solvent, then 1.4 to 1.9 faradays of charge per mole of benzyl dimethyl aniline cation are consumed, the particular value depending on the extent of solvent purification and the particular electrolysis conditions employed. In this case, all three of the possible products are obtained, with the distribution among them as would be expected on the basis of the charge consumed. The smaller the quantity of charge consumed, the larger the quantity of dibenzyl, and the smaller the quantity of toluene obtained. So here again, you can see the way that controlled potential electrolysis, combined with coulometric measurements, allows reasonable diagnoses to be made of electrode reactions which can follow more than one course. Now, as a final example of the utility of controlled potential electrolysis, I have included a pair of cases in which electrosynthesis is the primary objective. In B31, the problem was to reduce compound 1, iodophenylacridine, to the reduced product 2, in which a double bond has been reduced, but the iodine in the phenyl ring is not reduced. Product 3, in which the iodine has been reductively removed from the phenyl ring, is to be avoided if possible. The fact was that all of the chemical reducing agents which were able to accomplish a reduction of compound 1 to compound 2 were also powerful enough to reduce compound 2 further to produce compound 3. So, by chemical means, either no reduction at all was obtained or the reduction went too far. On the other hand, by controlled potential electrolysis of compound 1 at a mercury electrode at a potential selected on the basis of the current potential curve for a solution of iodophenylacridine, very high yields of compound 2 could be isolated from the mixture resulting after 2 electrons per molecule of iodophenylacridine had been consumed in the electrolysis. This is a classical example of the ability of controlled potential electrolysis to outdo chemical reduction methods because of the electroanalyst's ability to dial, as it were, the strength of the reducing agent employed by controlling the potential of his electrode. B32 shows another example in which a desired product, tetraethyl lead, is produced in high yield by doing nothing more than carrying out the reduction of ethyl bromide at a lead electrode in acetonitrile. The reduction of the ethyl bromide produces ethyl radicals at the surface of the electrode. These attack the lead electrode itself to produce tetraethyl lead and bromide. If the potential is made negative enough, the tetraethyl lead is subject to further reduction, and so in order to obtain high yields of the desired product, the potential of the electrode needs to be controlled, as in any other controlled potential electrolysis. If that is done, this procedure turns out to be a very simple way to produce a product of some value electrosynthetically. The general references on controlled potential electrolysis listed next in the manual can supply a number of other examples of the utility and power of this widely used electroanalytical technique. I would also recommend at this point that you turn off the tape and work through the study problems at the end of the section in order to review some of the most important points that have been discussed in this section.
Please turn to slide 3 for the continuation of this ACS audio course.